Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Signals from the Deep, the official podcast of your Seattle Kraken. Thank you to all of you for receiving our signal. Piper here, coming at you with my co-host, JT. We are about halfway through a road trip. How has it been for you so far?
Oh, I mean, good road trip. Anytime you get to be in Florida, it's pretty nice, and the weather is good. Nashville, a good city as well, but end of the day, about halfway through, still got a little bit of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't obviously control what's going on Correct. The ice, so all we can kind of control are our roles, of course. Which sometimes podcasting on the road is a little bit of a logistical conundrum to figure out. So we had a great interview with Bobby McMahon the other day when we were in Fort Lauderdale. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Oh, it was very good. Very insightful, some good answers, and nice to kind of just get to know him a little bit more, too, as being new to the roster since the trade deadline, getting in some games. So obviously we wanted to get him on and have a little conversation with him.
Yeah, and just his story. Like, we kind of just scratched the surface on it, but what a great story. I mean, just an undrafted player that literally just worked his way up, and you can just, I think it shows.
Yeah, well, just his mindset, right? I think when going from different, playing from fourth line all the way up to, you know, top line minutes, like kind of just how he developed those skills or the mindset to be able to do that and take that into the National Hockey League level. And especially since becoming a Kraken, he has definitely been finding the net.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been working well for him.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. That is at the end of this episode. We got a couple of things that we want to get to in the main pod here. I think we got to start with the headline news, in my opinion. This is the top line news. Adam Larsson played in his 1,000th game in the NHL when the Kraken were playing the Florida Panthers. Whole bunch of like fanfare around it, but the team will have more of a celebration and a ceremony when they get back to home ice, which is not for a while.
Yeah.
Are you okay, JD? I think the mic probably kicked up.
I just kicked the underside of the chair on accident. That was my fault. Yeah, we're okay, though. My shin hurts a little bit, but well, sorry to ruin the Adam Larsson.
If you were Adam Larsson, you would be playing through that and nobody would have ever known, because that is just the kind of guy that, like, Adam Larsson is. I was saying on the broadcast that Adam Larsson has been healthy enough to play in every single Kraken hockey game in history. He only missed one ever, and that was not because he couldn't play or because it wasn't healthy enough to play. That is because it was for the birth of his first child, which is a very,
well, I think, very good
reason to miss.
Well, and I think it just goes to show the type of person he is and the leader he is as well. Like, you have to think that there's been multiple games just of how he plays. He plays physical. He leads in block shots every single year. There's plenty of times where he could have said, I'm not going to play today, or, you know, this is nagging me, but that's not how he is. Such a good player, good person as well. Like, to get to 1,000 games is such an incredible milestone. Third player in that draft class to reach that milestone, and actually it was Mika Zibanejad, the second one, who was a day before Larsson got his 1,000, so kind of cool to see them be so close together. But you have to get a little bit of good fortune in your way. Obviously, you can't control everything when it comes to the game of hockey, but the things he can control with the work ethic to be ready for every game, how he prepares himself, and then again, just showing what he does every single day. So it's not an accident that you just get to 1,000 games in the National Hockey League. You have to be one hell of a player, which he is, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I look at his leadership qualities, especially what he's brought to the Seattle Kraken since day one, the consistency that he brings. Obviously, we always joke about it's just been him and Dunn paired together the entire time going through, but you see that not only with that pairing, but just how he prepares himself, how he shows up for every single game, and again, it's a great milestone for him and an awesome, it's going to keep going.
Yeah, the commitment that he, like, exemplifies, basically. And he said, you know, when we were talking to him ahead of that game, like, he's like, I've played through injury, I've played through illness, I've played through things, but I would rather play because I love this game and I love my team. And I just think that says a lot about him. So stick taps to Adam Larson. I'm sure that everybody will see more content on the Kraken channels online as his big ceremony at home comes nearer. But we did want to leave you with a couple of words from his defense partner, Vince Dunn.
Well, Vincent is obviously your partner in crime, Adam Larson's 1,000th game in the National Hockey League today. What's something over your time together that you've really grown to admire and appreciate about him?
I just think how much of a friend someone can be on a team. You know, it's easy to show up to the rink every day and work together, but to have that relationship away from the rink is really special and something that I really cherish.
For folks who don't get to see him like you and your teammates do, for fans at home, how would you describe what his character, what his personality and his work ethic is like?
Yeah, I think what most people don't see is how funny and how loose he is away from the rink, but by no means is he irresponsible or anything like that. He's always business when it comes to the games and practices and things like that, and handles himself really well in a lot of tough situations. So I think he's just been a great leader for our team, someone who's been a staple of the team ever since it's been a part of the NHL, and I think, when people start to meet him outside of the rink, they see that other side of him, which is really cool.
Thank you, Vince. We knew that he was the right person to go to. Anytime you're like, I need somebody who can really get across what Lars is like to the fans, I always go to Vince because partner in crime. Right?
They know. They're always there.
They know. Okay, another huge headline news for the team in the last week here. It was announced that the Seattle Kraken and the Carolina Hurricanes will be playing in the NHL Global Series next season in November. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it's like November 2nd or November 12th.
12th and 14th, I believe. That sounds right.
Yeah, so a two-game set against the Carolina Hurricanes in Helsinki, Finland. Super exciting. I know we don't know exactly what the broadcast like will be, so we don't know for sure if we will get to go or not or whatever, but it is very, very exciting for the team. I talked to a bunch of the guys about it too. Capo told me that Brandon Montour was already asking him about saunas and where they're going.
Yeah,
and
if he's
already working on the itinerary. I didn't ask Capo that. He was just like, yeah, Monty's already asking me what we're doing and what saunas we're going to. So then when I talked to Monty, when he came over, I was like, Capo said you're juiced for this. And he's like, oh, did he? No, it was funny.
That's got to be fun. And a wonderful experience, right, too, especially for some of the active players that on both rosters, actually, both have, players from Finland for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure that's partially why, right? You get an opportunity with those two teams. Some guys get to go home. But, you know, for everybody else, too, it's a chance to experience a culture. And that's where, you know, you look at Monty wanting to dive right in with his teammate and say, hey, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're looking way down the road for that. But obviously, guys are excited for it, and it's going to be an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, and so Capo is actually from Turku, which is not Helsinki. It is a different town, and until he was drafted by the Rangers, he played all of his hockey in his hometown, versus Eli Tolvanen is a native of Helsinki. So they have, like, different relationships, you know. It's like, that's not necessarily Capo's hometown.
No.
But he said that he is going to have so many friends and family there. He's like, I don't even want to know how much it's going to cost.
It'd be a heavy one.
Yeah.
I would assume so. I mean, at what point do you just get a suite or something, like, yeah, instead of trying to get individual tickets? But that is a problem for another day.
Yes, 100%. That is well down the line here. I did want to ask you, JT, so I've never been to any of those, you know, Scandinavian countries over there. You obviously played pro hockey in Sweden. How would you kind of describe what the culture is like there around hockey? Obviously, Finland and Sweden are not the same country culturally or in a variety of ways, but just a little bit, you know, different than, like, the North American scene.
Yeah, I mean, both obviously, when you're talking about Sweden and Finland, have amazing hockey history and the development. Obviously, a lot of players coming from there as well. But like you said, I was just in Sweden. Unfortunately for me, the majority of my time in Sweden was during COVID, so didn't necessarily get to truly experience, but obviously seeing videos, seeing pictures of what, you know, how full the rink was when we were, or prior to me, that year going through. But I got to see a slight bit at the end, right? Like, I think they allowed 100, then all of a sudden it was like 500, and then 1,000 people could be in the rink. But their fandom was awesome, you know, towards the end and getting into the finals when more people were allowed into the rinks. But even just, you know, our bus trip coming back to the rink, and we were 200-300 fans waiting for you in the parking lot with flares. They got the flags, the signs, the drums, singing chants, like, a little bit different in that style. It almost kind of reminds me of soccer. When it comes to fans with soccer, where there's a lot more like chanting, you got the scarves and the flags and everything that's going around. Like, super cool to be a part of that, at least especially towards the end. And I didn't even get the full experience. You know, I probably got a 45% experience of what the true fandom was like over there. So again, excited, you know, obviously if we do go, to be able to see that part of it as well. But great fans over there, obviously a rich hockey tradition or history and tradition over there as well. So good for them to get you know, the global series, but also for some of those guys, may not be their home city, but to go back to their home country and to play a game.
Yeah, and right along those lines, I thought I would just pull back the curtain for a moment, because if you are a regular listener of Signals from the Deep, then you know that we had Ellie Tolvanen on the last podcast episode, and we did know about this, you know, a little bit in advance. He certainly knew about it, so we did get to talk with him a little bit about it, and because of, you know, the press release, we had to not include that part. But he said exactly what you just said, basically, was that he was like, just the way that the hockey culture is a little bit more like soccer culture. Yeah. And just like, that's kind of how the energy is. And yeah, if he, you know, gets the opportunity to play, he's pretty excited about that too. So yeah, very exciting.
No, they love their hockey. Fans are awesome over there.
Yeah. But with that being said, I figure that it would be good for all of you to just hear a little clip from Kapo and Ellie Tolvanen talking about it, just in case you missed it on any of our channels.
Yeah, first time there for me with the, you know, playing here. So it's going to be nice. I mean, play in front of my family and friends. So it's always nice to go back there.
It's going to be really cool. You know, something I've, you know, dreamed of playing in an NHL game in Finland. You know, family, friends over there. Be able to play in Helsinki too. It's spiritual.
I mean, it's a, you know, big thing. A lot of people likes hockey over there. I mean, the national team, those games are big always in the end of the season. So I think they're gonna love it.
You know, I remember when I was a little kid, when I actually did those games. I think it's massive. Everybody's really excited about it. Yeah, I think hockey is, you know, it's a big part of the culture in Finland. You know, they're really passionate about hockey players and the national team. So you know, I think it's gonna be really nice to go and you know, be able to play in front of Finnish people.
All right, I have one more little player story, JT, that I wanted to talk about a little bit. You didn't overlap at all. No, you would not have overlapped at all with Freddie Gaudreau at the Minnesota Wild. But of course, the Kraken traded for Freddie Gaudreau from the Wild. And every March, every team that Freddie has ever been on World Down Syndrome Day, he's always kind of rallied his teammates around him to participate in Rock Your Socks Day, which is where people wear mismatched socks to spark conversations about Down syndrome. So when we were in Columbus on this road trip, Freddie had pretty much the whole team, as far as I saw. I think they all did the mismatched socks thing, and we were able to run and tell a great story about why this is a mission that is so close to Freddie's heart, which is, it's all inspired by his nephew Noah. And it was one of the best stories, or one of the most rewarding stories that I've ever gotten to put together. And I just kind of wanted to highlight that, because I just want people to see and hear what Freddie is saying about a topic like this, because it's so close to him, and he waits all year for the opportunity. So, and he's just such a stand-up guy. So anyway, you can look for that feature on Freddie and his nephew Noah on the Kraken's YouTube channel. But did you ever like participate in any kind of like team-based things like that at all? Like, you ever had like a teammate in your locker room be like, hey, can we all kind of like come together to do this little thing?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Nothing really pops out to my mind, but I mean, You know, I think it's grit on Freddie, obviously the other three as well in the league that helped design those socks. You know, a way for them to use their platform and also for the players to get involved as well, for, you know, show their support, you know, to Freddie. And I think it's just an awesome idea, awesome concept that they ended up going with. They love the socks that they helped design. And then at the same time, like you say, you're able to use your platform, you're able to spark a conversation and, you know, something that they all hold, you know, dear to their heart, and to be able to bring the awareness, to speak out about it, and to be able to kind of get and show that support or have your teammates have your back in that way, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was very heartwarming through, like, the whole process and talking with him over the last, a couple months. I mean, the first day I met Freddie was the first time that we had a conversation about this, and it was so clear that it was something he was so rightfully passionate about. And it's just really cool to get to hear, you know, some of our players talk about things like that, that are so personal and passionate, like that they're passionate about like that. So so stick taps to Freddie as well. And yeah, JT alluded to this, but I didn't mention this before, but Freddie, as well as three other players in the NHL, they actually designed some custom socks to be mismatched with each other with the league and the NHL Players Association. So I think most of our players wore the socks or the mismatched pair socks that Freddie designed, but you can, and many people did, just wear any mismatched socks. But and they're for sale too, the socks are, and I believe they support a good cause.
So. And it was Freddie, was Dylan Larkin, Charlie McAvoy, and Michael Carcone. So it was kind of the one for each, right? So a pretty cool initiative. And again, to see the, you know, from the start of wherever, you know, how the planning and going through, and then obviously getting it to that day, was pretty cool to see that kind of come out.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else, JT, that you feel we should touch on right here? We're in the middle of this road trip, so it's hard in this exact moment to, you know, make a big comment about how it's gone so far. But obviously, I think the team would have loved to gather more points at this point, but we're only halfway done, so.
Yeah, we're able to sneak the 1 point out in the shootout loss versus the Florida Panthers. But, you know, there's still work to be done. At this point, 5 points back, 12 games remaining on the schedule. So you're running out of real estate, but that doesn't mean that you quit. That is just like in the last game, down big and the Kraken keep pushing through. So, I mean, you just get on a run here. And at the end of the day, you know, it's just they're in a spot where it's, or you have to have the urgency. You have to, got to find a way to get those 2 points. And obviously you're not in a spot where you hold your own destiny in your hands. You have to hope for a little bit of a drop from different teams. But at any point that can happen. So the Kraken just have to focus on their game, getting back to playing their style of hockey. And you know, the 2 points are the most important thing right now, each and every time you lace up those skates.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help, we didn't mention this, but it doesn't help the fact that Jared McCann has been injured as well. You know, losing a goal scorer like that on top of also losing Jaden Schwartz earlier this month. So that's, you know, battling through a little bit of adversity too as a team, that definitely impacts, you know, your offense as a group, which has been part of the struggle here. So hopefully Jared will be back though. He's still on the trip.
Yeah.
He's still here. So that's a very good sign. Oops, now I kicked the table. so that's a good sign. And Coach Lambert said that he's day-to-day. So again, that's positive, you know, so.
Well, like you said, it's just halfway through. There's still 3 more games on the, I mean, technically it's just the road swing of games, right? And then for the one day back and then going to Edmonton as well. So you still have an opportunity to salvage. We're able to get one out of Florida. If you can win the next 3, you're setting yourself into a much better spot. But you don't win all 3 if you don't go win the next one, right? So you have to focus one game at a time. Kraken can't look too far ahead, right, to see how many games are out. It's one game at a time, and that's got to be the focus.
Well, and especially right now in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, anything can happen. I think was it McDavid?
Yeah, Connor McDavid. It's called the pillow fight.
Yeah, that was it's pretty accurate, but. I mean, coming from McDavid, so run with it.
Yes, exactly. If Connor McDavid said it, we can say it, okay? We can say it. Yes, it has been a pillow fight. It has been crazy to watch this, like, to be scoreboard watching right now. Like, what? Like, every team is just losing in our division. It's so bizarre. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, I haven't. And, you know, I think it's, It's a weird situation, obviously, with everyone has the condensed schedule, but the Pacific Division definitely has the worst travel, in my opinion, going through, actually. So maybe, and who knows, maybe that's a part of it, right? The different travel, all the different time zones that the Pacific has to go through versus some of, especially when you look at the Northeast selection, when you look at the Eastern Conference, like obviously a lot smaller road trips, you can get back to your bed. No, those are all excuses, but at the end of the day, like, I don't know that I've seen where one is that far behind. Like, we were just talking the other, what was it, for the Florida game, tied in points with the Kraken, and they're 14 points out of a playoff spot versus before the game, the Kraken were 4, Nashville 1, Kraken got the 1 point, so now it's at 5, but like, just the difference there. So really anything can happen. You're never out of it, especially at this point in the way that the Pacific has been. You still have an opportunity, you still have a chance, and like I said, it's the mindset of you need the 2 points, and you can't look how many games are left or how many, you know, how, we got to get X amount of points out of the points remaining. It's like, well, like the only 2 points that matter are the next ones.
The ones right in front of you.
And then when you do take care of that, you look at the next one, and that really has to be the mindset for the Kraken going into those last 12 games.
Yeah, stacking wins, stacking wins. So we will see. We will see how it plays out. By the time you are all listening to this, they will have played another game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are much better than their record shows that they are. So, yeah. All right. Anything else that we should put a button on before we toss to Bobby?
No, I think that's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, everyone, here is our interview with Bobby McMahon. All right, everybody, welcome to Signals from the Deep, the official podcast of your Seattle Kraken. Bobby McMahon, we are so excited to have you on the show, Bobby, and on the team. Thanks for making time for us on a road off day.
Of course, happy to be here.
So I just want to start, Bobby, by talking a little bit about your background, because obviously you're still new to our fans. You played college hockey at Colgate, of course. Why college hockey, like a kid from Alberta?
Yeah, I guess it started like Western Canada. Everybody looks at the WHL, similar to the OHL, and kind of the eastern side there, or the Q, and everybody's just trying to play that league, I guess, right away. That was the goal growing up. You always saw those guys just being like the level almost before the NHL. They were like, you see so many guys going to the NHL straight from there. So that was my dream. I was never drafted to the WHL, so then I was picked up. I was thinking about going there with Prince Albert, but then it was a few days before camp that I decided it might be better for me to take a longer development route and try and play college hockey, maybe get an education at the same time, try and explore that side of hockey and that side of life. So I didn't know that a scholarship was on the way. I just kind of took that leap and hoped that if I played junior, I was able to earn myself potentially a scholarship, and luckily was able to do that in Colgate and was super happy with my decision to go there.
What was it like to move across the country at that time in your life and do the college hockey thing?
Yeah, that was hard because I'd been in Alberta my whole life playing hockey, close enough for my parents to probably come to every game. And then it was a 4-hour flight to Toronto and an hour to Syracuse and then another hour drive to get to upstate New York to Colgate. So my mom wasn't thrilled about it, but it was something that another leap that I had to take and something that I had to find my way in. And it was hard to do, to go all that way and not know anyone. I didn't know really anyone at all, just kind of was able to go on a visit, meet the assistant coaches, meet the head coach, but didn't know anyone really going there, playing there. So I made a ton of new friends, new experiences, learned a ton socially, learned a ton educationally, and learned a ton from hockey being there for 4 years.
How would you say your game has evolved since college and then getting into the pro ranks?
I'd say there's a lot of like small details that really matter when it comes to pro. In college, it's a lot of run and gun. You play 2 games a week. Guys are full of energy. You're ready to go every weekend. You're working out a ton. Guys are really strong. They're fast. But I think it's thinking the game a little bit more in pro is where it comes in. And I had a good coach in the American League with the Marlies, where I was able to really learn that side of the game and really learn about those small details of like getting in guys' way, like trying to give other guys time, trying to make the players around you better rather than just always working on your own skills, which I did a ton in college. And then luckily that's carried me to this point, but then it's learning to think the game and play the game within the game almost once you get to pro.
Yeah, 4 years at Colgate. You were, of course, a Hobie Baker finalist and a captain of the team while you were there. What were some of your favorite memories from playing there?
You spend a lot of time with your class and with the guys that you're going to school with. I think those were some of the best memories. I live with guys in a house of 15 guys, which was pretty crazy.
That's a lot. I mean, we had some, guys on the team too, but 15 seems
all teammates?
No, so okay. It ended up being 9 guys on the team, all guys in my class, like in the class of 2020, and then a few guys on the soccer team and a few other guys that we met on campus and like. So it was really cool to have those experiences maybe outside of the hockey part of it and get to know the world that they live in and kind of how they operate, because you're living in a house with them, you're using the same kitchen, using the same living room, like you're hanging out with these guys all the time. So those experiences are ones that I'll appreciate and remember for a really long time. And then the hockey side of it too, playing college hockey is so fun. The excitement's there. It feels like you're playing for your school, you're playing for more than just your team, which is really special.
Yeah. You played college hockey as well. I don't know how well you guys have met each other or caught up with each other yet. But when you signed with the Marlies, ultimately, what do you kind of remember about those conversations? When, you know, leading up to it, how much did you know? You know, what was that moment in your life like at the time?
I was pretty much in the dark the whole time because it was COVID. So we didn't know even when the American League would start. So I was just kind of waiting, trying to be as ready as I possibly could. I had no idea how good the American League would be or pro hockey would be at all. So I was just trying to work super hard that summer, that extended summer of like 8 or 9 months that it was, until hockey was going again. And then was just super excited to get after it and, was lucky enough to play on a team with really good players. So I was able to watch players that had played in the NHL. Guys that were maybe on the tail end of their career that had passed some wisdom down to me, which was super helpful. There was a lot of veteran guys on that team in Toronto when I first got there with the Marlies. So just learning how to be a good pro, be a good teammate, that's all super important, because if you're not a good character guy, you're not a good teammate, you're not going to be able to play long either, and not many people are going to want you on their team. So it was just understanding how to help the guys around you and how to be a good teammate was important.
Yeah. What kind of, so you mentioned obviously learning about the character side of the game, but what about when it came to just what it did for you to kind of go through some of that adversity? Like, you know, you mentioned that maybe you wanted to play junior hockey in Western Canada, you go to college hockey instead, then COVID hits, you go to the AHL, bounce to the ECHL a little bit. Like, what did that teach you about yourself too?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I actually started in the East Coast because the AHL wasn't playing. So they wanted us to play pro games. So there's a few of us that had signed with the Marlies as rookies and ended up starting in Wichita, playing in the East Coast League. And obviously that's 2 leagues removed from the NHL, and the goal is to play in the NHL. So it was a little bit hard to do that and go there, because you always think, well, this is so far away, like I'm so far away from my goal. But then that taught me so much in how to remain focused, how to work on things that only I could control. There's so much in hockey and so much in life in general that you can't control. So I was just trying to focus on myself, and not in like a selfish way, but also like being there for teammates and being there for guys, but also just like making sure that I was working on my game and trying to be the best player that I could be and bring the best game that I could bring. And then when I got called up to the Marlies, it was, okay, how do I find a way to stick in this lineup? And it was mentally really hard because they have, like I said, a ton of guys that had played in the NHL, a ton of guys that had played a lot of American League games as well. So they were pretty established. So it was hard to leap those guys who have learned so much and have established their play so well. So I spent some time looking at video, looking at my game internally, trying to work through my mental game side of it to just be working at my strengths and come ready to play and play to my strengths every game. So that was, for me, like using my speed, being physical, and trying to be hard to play against. And in doing that, I was able to find a spot on the fourth line in the American League. And then that turned into 5 or 6 games of success, and then was able to jump to like the third line, and then gained a little bit more confidence, was able to expand my game a little bit less one-dimensional of like being kind of like a grinder, as people call it. Mm-hmm. But I tried to fill that role. And I think working my way up to eventually playing first, second line minutes in the American League, and then power play and stuff like that, I think that taught me how to be focused, but also play such a well-rounded game, because I was forced to play every type of position and every style of play. So I feel like I was well-equipped to play in any situation. And then moving to the NHL, I think had I not gone through that experience of learning to play all those aspects of my game and learning all those skills that really matter to keep you in the lineup, I had to go through that same thing going to the NHL. So it helped me stick in the NHL when I got the opportunity to play my first few games there.
You mentioned your speed. Yeah. That's something we talk about. Is that where you were going to go? When did you know that you were faster than everybody else on the ice, basically? Like, when could you, like, really sense that? And how did that become such a core strength of yours?
I mean, I was fast as a kid, I think, when I was, like, 7, 8. I think just because I had a good stride and my dad was my coach and I had a couple of friends' dads who were coaches and we would just do circles and circles and skating all the time. So I think I always kind of had the stride, but then it wasn't till I think near the ends of my years of college that I was like, okay, like speed seems to be my strength and I want to continue working on it. And then transitioning kind of out of college into pro is when I felt like I had a lot of speed, but then it was also working on how to utilize that, because you can't just skate around the ice a million miles an hour. You got to pick your spots to utilize it. So then again, working like in the American League and trying to figure out, okay, where's my strengths here of how to use my speed. It started with the physicality side of it, is I can close quick on guys and then finish them and hit guys. But then also then it transitioned into the offensive side of it and generate chances and generate speed and set up the offensive zone and carry the puck all the way down the ice. So it's just something that I continually worked on, because I did find that I had the stride and I had the power, and it was just trying to figure out how to implement that into the pro game as best I could.
Well, I think everybody in Seattle was excited to see that speed, to see the shot on display, you know, in a Seattle Kraken sweater. So kind of a two-part question. What was the trade like for you? And did you hear anything about Seattle prior to coming here? And how has it been so far?
Yes. So that was a wild experience. I got taken out of two games prior when I was with the Leafs there, taken out of the lineup just as precautionary with the trade deadline coming up. So then I was just playing the waiting game of trying to wait to get a call to see where I was going. I heard rumors about a bunch of different places, so it's just you're just hanging out, looking at the phone all day. And then it was the day of the trade deadline. I was told I was getting traded by the GM in Toronto. And then it wasn't until the deadline's at 3 p.m. Eastern, and it wasn't until 3:05 that I got a call from my agent going to Seattle. And it's obviously a shock at the beginning because I didn't know any of the teams where it was. But then as soon as I got that call, I was looking at the Seattle team, like where we were ranked here, where we were in the standings, and looking at the guys here, and was super excited to make that leap all the way over here. And then got a bunch of texts from guys. Susie had played here before. A lot of friends and family and stuff have made the trips to Seattle, and they love the city, and they're super excited for me to go there, and they want to come visit. And those are all super encouraging words to hear, and it just made me more excited to come explore the city and play for the Kraken.
Yeah, and you had a little bit of familiarity with some people in the organization, but not much. But what's it been like to work under Lane now here after last year and him in kind of a different role?
Yeah, it's great to see him as a head coach now. You could kind of sense that in Toronto that he had the prowess of a head coach in a way, and he definitely embodies that here, and he's doing a good job, and he has a good beat on this locker room and on the guys and kind of what we need day to day. So it's been helpful to know him and know what he's like. You just kind of skip the introductions, let's get right to hockey, especially at that point in the season where you have 20 games left. So that was super nice to just kind of jump into it, and honestly eased me into the transition, because hockey is kind of what I do most of my life. So when I'm feeling comfortable in that, I think I feel comfortable in a lot of other aspects in my life. So he was super good at welcoming me, being excited for me to be here, and get me going with this group.
Well, you definitely got right to it. We look at those games. Obviously, it took a while to get into the lineup, working on getting the immigration stuff settled. But seems like you fit in quite well and have found some chemistry with guys as well out on the ice. How's that been working for you?
Yeah, it's been great.
Easy?
Yeah, it's been, it definitely helps when you put two in and you're playing with Abs and Maddie the first game, and they put it right on your stick back door. So that helps ease the nerves and ease the tension of coming into a new team. But I mean, all the guys have been great. They've all been super welcoming, super encouraging, super helpful. I got a million questions asking people's names, asking where I should be, like what time to be, like are guys, like do guys show up early for meetings, like how early, like all those things are little things that you don't really think about when you're transitioning to a new team. But guys have been super helpful because I've had a million questions.
Yeah, that's good. Well, how about outside of hockey? We know what type of player you are. We talked about the speed, shot, going to that, but what are some of the hobbies that you have outside of the game?
I definitely spend a lot of time on the golf course in the off season. I love going to coffee shops, getting coffees with the girlfriend, just checking out different areas. Love traveling. I'm definitely a beach guy over a pool guy. So in Florida here, I've already been on the beach and in the water twice. Love the outdoors, and that's it that I can think of, I guess.
Okay, when you say you like traveling, are you a vacation taker or are you like a trip taker? Do you know what I mean? Do you want to go to a resort and just sit and do nothing and chill like that? Or do you want to go explore, go to museums, go hike? Like,
yeah, I really do like hiking. I guess it depends on the place. When it's hot, I don't think I have it in me to go hiking around and sweating through a shirt and that sort of thing. But I do love exploring and see new places, see new cultures, things like that. I'm not afraid to put some miles on, put the steps in, and check out quite a few places.
Seattle has a big music scene too. I don't know if you are familiar with that, but a strong music history. We have a lot of connections in our team to artists who are from Seattle in the Pacific Northwest originally. What kind of music do you like?
I like a lot of EDM music. That's kind of what I gravitate towards the most. A little bit of rap, but I would say primarily EDM. So.
Like what artists?
Rufus Du Sol is great. I also went to a Coldplay concert this summer and just huge fans of them.
Not exactly EDM.
I know, but that was... that was one that's like maybe outside of the EDM that I was just thought of that I really do appreciate. But yeah, Rufus and then more like the mainstream stuff that comes out usually.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about country music as an Alberta guy?
I might catch flack from guys for saying it, but I don't love country.
Yeah, you didn't say it, so I was like, I gotta follow up.
That would be an easy answer because everybody loves country in Alberta. But yeah, just not the biggest country fan.
Yeah, me neither. You aren't really either.
No, I do. I enjoy it. Yeah. Not all of it, but I mean, I grew up in Minnesota. Nothing like country music on a lake, like on a boat. Like sure. That to me is, that's good. Maybe
it's
a
like
beer
the
in hand. Also, that, yeah, no. It's not my, not I gravitate towards it, but yeah, I do enjoy it.
You got one or you want me to go?
You go.
Okay. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what food would you eat? Like one meal?
Probably a peanut butter and jam sandwich.
Jam? Not jelly?
Not jelly.
Like you want like raspberry?
Yeah, jelly's too like fluffy almost. I like a denser, sweeter jam to
I do like that
cut answer. The peanut butter taste.
Yeah, of course you do.
Because peanut butter is such an aggressive flavor that you need something like sweeter. It's like so aggressively salty and such a bold flavor that you need the sweeter, like denser jam to cut it, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
I still think that the answer has to be pizza.
No.
I think you get sick of pizza. My whole life.
Pizza, regular pizza. I've had like baked potato with bacon pizza. Like there's so many different pizzas.
Now that's where you get a little bit unfair because you could go, a zillion different pizzas. You could almost go to a calzone or something. Like where do you draw the line there?
Oh, I'm drawing the line to my favor every single time. So that's where I'm going with pizza. So.
Yeah. Okay, I got one more for you. Going back to college a little bit, I know we talked about this briefly, but we already had multiple people ask us because for some reason it's caught a lot of people's attention that you have a major in economics and a minor in theater. Why both of those things?
I think economics because I always have enjoyed the business side of the world and just super interested in how things work. I like to know the why behind things and kind of just understanding the economy and why it works the way it does has always piqued my interest. So that was kind of the reason for going into that. And then theater was something that was definitely unexpected, but heading to a liberal arts school, I was open-minded and definitely wanted to explore as much of education as I could that they were offering there, and then took a basic acting class. I think it was my second semester at school. Really enjoyed it, really had a great professor, was able to kind of express myself in a way that isn't natural and kind of put me in different scenarios where you have to get creative, you have to get playful, you have to get interactive with other people in a world that you don't usually do or never do. Mm-hmm. So that side of it I really enjoyed, and then took another class, got into a contemporary dance class. Did children's theater.
What is contemporary dance? What does that mean? What kind of dancing is this?
It's honestly
TikTok dancing.
There was no TikTok dances. It's actually hard to describe because we did some ballet, we did some hip hop, we did just interpretive dance. We did kind of all. It kind of covers all aspects. Mm-hmm. It's almost like just modern dance of like kind of what's currently trending and. Not on TikTok, but in in the dance world a little bit. So that was super fun, and it was challenging as well. And also being an athlete, I enjoyed doing that side of it. So it kind of like did mesh with the athletic world, but also just in a social world of like putting myself in uncomfortable situations of like speaking in front of people and acting ridiculous in front of people and having to come up with improv on the spot. Those sorts of things of all. I think rounded out my personality, my character, all those things that I really had to challenge myself to do, but I'm super appreciative that I was able to do them. And then eventually worked my way to a thesis where we did a traveling play through a hotel with an audience of 8 people that followed you all around the hotel. And it was, the whole hotel was in on it. It was such a cool experience.
Wow.
So I'm super appreciative that I was able to do that at Colgate.
That's so cool. I bet that like probably helped you so much too with like handling media and stuff like that, I would think too. Like just getting more comfortable with interviews and all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah. So once you get put up on stage and you do something completely ridiculous and embarrass yourself and you realize it's all going to be fine, it really puts things in perspective of how the important things are just like treating people and that. But nobody's really worried about what you're doing that much, or they're at least going to forget about it if you do something ridiculous out of nowhere. Mm-hmm.
Well, I got one more.
I was
before.
A theater kid. The only concussion I ever got was on stage as a literal tree in a play. Okay. So.
Too many. one more before we let you go hang out at the water. Don't want to take up too much of your time here. But what is your golf handicap? And then what are your thoughts on gimmies? And if you like them, what is an acceptable range?
I would say I'm probably like a 9 handicap now. And gimmies, I don't love them. I feel like guys give them away too much.
Okay.
I think it's too far. I think once you get into, you'll give it a foot, maybe 10 inches to a foot, you'll give them a gimme. But outside of that, I say putt it out because you got to get your real score.
I do agree with that. And I will say the only time that I really like gimmies is when you're betting and then you give somebody their gimme putts and they're like 3-4 footers for the first like 9-10 holes. And then all of a sudden when it comes down to 17-18 and it's close and they haven't had to make one of those, now all of a sudden they're missing them. So it usually works out into my advantage when you do it that way. But I do agree, just putt it out.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, there's a little game within the game there. It's like, don't let them hit that distance until it really matters.
Don't
and they'll
let
be
them
shaking.
Get comfortable. Yeah, so they'll
I like
shake
that.
You
I might
that.
Pull that strategy, actually.
I'm just saying.
I know. It's just so you. Of course, you're scheming when you're just like.
The game in the game is right. So, well, thank you very much for taking your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is
thank
fun.
You very much. And especially on a practice day when you could be outside enjoying, we really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Signals from the Deep with Piper Shaw and JT Brown. Give us an assist by rating your show on your listening app. You can watch the full video episodes on the Seattle Kraken's YouTube. Go Kraken!